Reading is from Isaiah chapter 11, verses 1 to 16. It's headed, "A Branch from Jesse." A shoot will come up from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. The Spirit of the Lord will rest on him, the Spirit of wisdom and of understanding, the Spirit of counsel and of might, the Spirit of knowledge and fear of the Lord. And he will delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what he sees with his eyes, or decide by what he hears with his ears. But with righteousness he will judge the needy, with justice he will give decisions for the poor of the earth. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, and the breath of his lips he will slay the wicked. Righteousness will be his belt, and faithfulness the sash around his waist. The wolf will live with the lamb. The leopard will lie down with the goat. The calf and the lion and the yearling together, and a little child will lead them. The cow will feed with the bear, their young will lie down together, and the lion will eat straw like the ox. The infant will play near the cobra's den, the young child will put its hand into the viper's nest. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. In that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will rally to him, and his resting place will be glorious. In that day, the Lord will reach out his hand a second time to reclaim the surviving remnant of his people from Assyria, from Lower Egypt, from Upper Egypt, from Cush, from Elam, from Babylonia, from Hamath, and from the islands of the Mediterranean. He will raise a banner for the nations and gather the exiles of Israel. He will assemble the scattered people of Judah from the four quarters of the earth. Ephraim's jealousy will vanish, and Judah's enemies will be destroyed. Ephraim will not be jealous of Judah, nor Judah hostile towards Ephraim. They will swoop down on the slopes of Philistia to the west. Together they will plunder the people to the east. They will subdue Edom and Moab, and the Ammonites will be subject to them. The Lord will dry up the gulf of the Egyptian sea. With a scorching wind, he will sweep his hand over the Euphrates River. He will break it up into seven streams so that anyone can cross over in sandals. There will be a highway for the remnant of his people that is left from Assyria, as there was for Israel when they came up from Egypt." This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. John Piper once said that biblical prophecy is a bit like mountain ranges. I wonder if we could have the first slide up. And there are lots of different mountains of different heights, and it's often not until you get closer that you can distinguish between the mountains. And he was saying prophecy is like that, you know. From a long way away, it just looks like one block of mountains. But only as you get closer can you work out what is coming first. And so we have lots of prophecies here. We have the prophecy of the first coming of Christ, the shoot of Jesse. We have the prophecy of his final return, which is just so exciting. We're going to look at that at the end. But then there are other mountains in the foreground. There's the prophecy of the judgment on Judah and their exile. And there's also prophecy of their return home the second Exodus. So lots of different mountain ranges, lots of different prophecies. And we're going to try and look at them together this morning. The first one I want to look at does concern judgment. And if you look back in chapter 10 of Isaiah, you will see a judgment on those very people that God has used to judge the people of Israel, the northern tribes of Israel. I loved what David said about plants, and it's very timely because this prophecy and what we're looking at in chapter 11 is all about plants, particularly trees. There are lots of trees in Isaiah. There's stumps, there's oaks, myrtles, grapevines, and there's also cedar tree, the cedars of Lebanon. And the nation of Assyria, who were one of the sort of towering nations of this time, are described, they're compared to the cedars of Lebanon. They are so mighty. They tower over many of the other nations and terrify them. Let me just see if I can move this on. I don't know why I'm having problems with the clicker at the moment. It just doesn't like me. It is definitely on. It was on. Maybe, no, now I turned it off, maybe. So let's try and move on. Right. So here we have a cedar tree. Now, if you go in to the British Museum, there's a whole section of the British Museum on the Assyrian Empire. And I went round the other day as part of my training at Spurgeon's, and you get to you get this sense of how enormous this empire was and how terrifying it was and why the kings, particularly kings of Judah, had been so fearful of this empire. And yet what we're going to see in this prophecy is that nothing, when you, if you fear God, you need fear nothing else, not even these towering empires like Assyria or Egypt. In the British Museum, when you walk in, you're immediately confronted with these huge things you see on the top right there, which are, I think, I'm trying to remember their names. I think they're called Lamassu. And they're a kind of mixture of a human face and a lion's body, and they're winged as well, and they are absolutely enormous. They tower above you. As you walk in, you see the slings that they used and the way that they would desecrate cities by laying siege to them. These huge stones that they were using to lay siege to the towns. And we know that the city of Lachish, the Judean city, had been laid siege to by the Assyrians. In fact, these very stones were taken from that city. As you go further into this room, 10B, in the British Museum, you see the results of the siege, and it's pitiful. This mighty king, King Sennacherib, you can just about make him out in the top right, seated on a throne. These people who are enslaved are just being brought before him in abject misery. These are the slides that are less gruesome. You can just see some people kneeling before him, being brought up to his throne, having to sort of pay homage to him. Meanwhile, these guys are waving the flies off his head behind. But there's scenes of desecration, people being flayed, people being beheaded. The Assyrian Empire was utterly ruthless. And this stuff was just the king's wallpaper in his bedroom. I mean, he was utterly ruthless. And you could understand why someone like Jonah was not keen on going on a mercy trip to Nineveh in Assyria. And the Assyrians think that they are invincible, but actually they are just being used as tools by God to bring about his purposes. You see, God's people, as we know, have rebelled time and time again against him. First, we saw it in Israel, in the northern tribes. And God uses the Assyrian Empire to come against them and to bring it against them and to bring them down. And he will do the same, but through a different means in the southern tribe of Judah. But these empires, however mighty they are, should never forget that they are only instruments in the Lord's hands. He says, does the axe raise itself above the person who swings it? Isaiah asks, or the sore raise its boast against the one who uses it? And Assyria, in all its pride, will be cut down by the Lord. In fact, by the combined forces of Babylon, Media, and Persia, and nothing will grow from this stump. It will just be wallpaper in the British Museum in years to come, a relic to look back on. Nothing will be left. But Assyria, sadly, is not the only nation that is cut down. And our passage today in Isaiah 11 looks at the people of God, God's own beloved people. The people of Judah are a tree, the Lord says, to be chopped down due to their rebellion towards God. You can read the context of this more in chapter 10. And Assyria, as I said, took Israel, but the Babylon will take Judah. And since David's glorious reign, where there had been unity, where God had been worshipped, and then the temple had been built under Solomon, since that time, king after king after king in David's line had refused to follow the Lord. They had dishonored his name. They'd forgotten that the first commandment is, I am the Lord your God who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. And they worshipped many other gods. And not surprisingly, as they stopped worshipping the Lord, they stopped caring about what was important to him. The poor, the needy, one by one, without exception almost, David's kings made unjust laws, deprived the poor of their rights, made widows their prey, and robbed the orphans. Look at Isaiah 10, verse 2. And these kings thought that they were immune from justice because the poor have no political power. Who's going to listen to the poor? But God listens, and God sees, and God acts. And he sends prophet after prophet after prophet to the people of Judah, but they refuse to listen. God says, you have not returned to me, nor have you sought the Lord Almighty, so I will cut off from Israel both head and tail, both palm branch and reed in a single day. This is the judgment. But thankfully, judgment and mercy come together in these prophecies. And the Lord is quick to show mercy. And so in this passage in Isaiah 11, we have this word of salvation and hope. And it's a mountain range that is an enormous mountain range that we are still working towards today. A shoot will come from the stump of Jesse. From his roots, a branch will bear fruit. Now, recently, we had to cut down a tree in our garden, and I noticed the other day that it's got this tiny shoot growing from it. And so I've asked my beautiful assistant over here, Dave Hyde, to pass round this stump. As I'm talking, I'd like you to hold it, pass it round, and look at it and try and notice this shoot. It's tiny. So, Dave, yeah, if you could pass it round. It's absolutely tiny. But it's a shoot of hope. It's a word of salvation to the people. They will be cut down, but God has not finished with them. And 700 years later, after Isaiah, an angel tells a young girl who is nothing from a town that is nowhere that she will give birth to a son, and the Lord will give him the throne of his father David, and he will reign over Jacob's descendants forever. His kingdom will never end. Jesus is both shoot and root. He is shoot. He comes from the line of David, but he is also the source of this new kingdom. Jesus says in Revelation 22, I am the root and the descendant of David. In other words, he's both the source and the offspring. He's the beginning and the end. He is pre-existent. Before Abraham, I am, he said. And he is incarnate. He's born of the Virgin in the line of David. And just as this shoot emerged from total obscurity and looked so tiny, so fragile, so this shoot from the line of David will emerge, Jesus of Nazareth, from the most unexpected place. And he will branch out, not just across the nation of Israel, but across the whole world. And that's why we're here today. And God's Spirit rests on this new king. The descendants of David had not lived, for the most part, under the Spirit of God. They had had spirits that were cynical and proud and pompous. And that had resulted in spiritual bankruptcy in the nation. But the promised shoot of Jesse will live under the Spirit of God, will depend on God's Spirit, just as you and I right now are depending on breath to live. Living under the Spirit bears fruit. Look at verse 2 to 5. The king will have the spirit of wisdom and understanding. He will be able to discern, to judge rightly. He will have understanding and be able to see to the heart of an issue. He won't just look at the outside and judge from that. He will look at the heart. He will align himself with what is close to God's heart. With righteousness, it says, he will judge the needy. With justice, he will give decisions for the poor. He's going to be full of good counsel. He is the mighty counselor. That means that he's able to take the right course of action, but also he's full of might, because you need power to see the right course of action through. His word will be powerful. Notice, there's no need for physical weapons here. He will strike the earth with the rod of his mouth. His word carries power. And righteousness and faithfulness will be his belt. A belt is what you put on. It was a kind of symbol in these times that you were ready for action. His action will be full of faithfulness and righteousness. And really key, he will be full of the knowledge of the Lord. Not information about the Lord, but he will know the Lord intimately. He will enjoy relationship with the Lord. And under all of this and round it is this phrase, the fear of the Lord. He's going to be somebody who doesn't just fear the Lord, but delights in fearing the Lord. The previous kings had feared many other things. They'd feared Egypt. They'd feared Assyria. They tried to make pacts with other people and they'd compromised. But instead, this king is going to fear the Lord and nothing and no one else. He's going to be gloriously free. How we need God's Spirit. How we need the Spirit of the Lord to inspire us in whatever form of leadership we're in, whether it's at work or in church or just as parents, we need the Spirit of the Lord. It is so easy to look at Assyria and to tremble, but instead we need to live under the Spirit of the Lord. He is going to give us counsel and power. And the same Spirit that rests on the Lord at his baptism and that he lives under obediently throughout his ministry, that same Spirit is left for us. And if you would like to receive more of the Holy Spirit, we would love to pray with you after the service. But this new thing that is promised through Jesus of Nazareth, this kingdom is going to branch out forever. And we see some of the effects of this kingdom in this final part of the prophecy. A picture of cosmic reconciliation, a new age of royal government and international peace. The whole of creation, if you look at Isaiah 11, is brought back into joint through this root of Jesse. And as someone who has a deep love of creation, I found Isaiah 11 really hopeful. If you look at some of these images, verse 6, predator and prey live together. I mean, we can't even get our heads around that. We are totally wired to be fearful whenever we see prey, whether it's a lion or a bear, unless it's the other side of a zoo fence, or a snake, we're fearful, naturally. But actually, there's going to be a time when all those hostilities will break down and a child will play fearlessly around a den of snakes. As someone who has a child who loves snakes, I can tell you it fills me with fear at the moment. But one day that will go. All those hostilities will go. All fear is banished. Why? Because the curse from Genesis 3 will finally be lifted. That is a day to look forward to. Whether it's amongst creatures, whether it's amongst humans or nations, all the old hostilities will go. The enmity between human and serpent disappears. And human dominion finally takes the form it was meant to take right at the beginning of Genesis, in the form of stewardship, not exploitation of animals. There's a cosmic reconciliation that is going to take place under this new king. And this is something we need to think about, I think, Christians, because we often kind of poo-poo the ideas of, oh, the environment, you know, it's just people getting on a hobby horse. I was walking through London the other day with Josie, and we got caught up across Waterloo Bridge. I don't know if any of you saw Extinction Rebellion, but basically they took over Waterloo Bridge, and they were protesting for people to really wake up and take notice of what is happening to our environment. It was a very interesting experience walking across. They had all down the middle of the bridge, they'd planted trees in pots, and it completely transformed the atmosphere on Waterloo Bridge. And they were playing, they were singing, it was very peaceful. And I reflected, what I saw there was a God-given desire, I believe, that we should be good stewards of this world and of creation. But here's the rub. Trying to reach cosmic peace without dealing with the problem of human rebellion will be futile. People have tried it before, and time again they've come up against human selfishness. But this is God's end plan. He is going to bring about cosmic reconciliation, but only through his Son, Jesus Christ. When Jesus died on the cross, it was to bring about a cosmic reordering of this world, to bring God's shalom to bear. And we are carriers of this kingdom, Christians. We need to wake up to our responsibilities, both keeping peace amongst each other, but also peace in this world and with our environment. This is how it's all going to end. If you look at verse 10, in that day, the root of Jesse will stand as a banner for the peoples. The nations will rally to him, and his resting place will be glorious. The entire earth, one day, will become God's holy mountain. There will be nowhere where the fear of the Lord is not known. The whole earth will become the holy land. And in Isaiah 2, we see the Gentile nations gathering around Christ. But here in Isaiah 11, we see God's people, the people that he chose and called out of Egypt. We see them being called back to him. And in the midst of all the judgment, Isaiah brings them hope that God will bring home a faithful remnant. One of Isaiah's sons, and I find this stunning, in the midst of all the judgments that Isaiah is having to give, he names one of his sons Yashub, which means a remnant will return. And we see this promise fulfilled in the second Exodus, where God's people return to the land. And the new King David will one day reunite the 12 tribes of Israel who have been so fractured since David's time. Judah, Israel, reunited. And then in verse 11, we get these two lines from the north in Assyria to the south in Cush, and from the east to the west, Elam to the islands of the sea. All of God's people reunited around the new king. And in one sense, that mountain range was crossed when the people did return from exile from 535 BC. But in verse 11, it speaks of God reaching out his hand a second time to reclaim the remnant of his people and to bring them home. And I believe, personally, that the first time was the return from exile, but the second time will be Jesus' return. And on that day, and it will be a glorious day, whether we were from the original stump, the people of God from Israel, or whether we've been grafted in, like many of us have later, whether we're Gentiles, we will all be gathered around the King. This is God's salvation purpose, and nothing will get in his way. No empire, they'll be used. They'll be instruments for him, but they will come and they will go. No empire will stand against him. No natural barrier will stop God achieving his purposes. Gulfs will be crossed. Rivers will be dried up. The signal goes up, come nations, and look around you today. They are coming. We are seeing people, particularly in the global south, being gathered to the King. The nations will rally to him, and his resting place will be glorious. Friends, we need to pray in line with these promises. We need to walk towards this mountain range. These promises for Israel, but also for all nations. We need to keep our eyes fixed on our banner, Jesus Christ, and gather around him. You know, in these days, if they were in battle, the king would often try and find a hill on the battleground. And he would stick up a branch and tie a flag to it, and then all his soldiers would come and gather around that flag. And that is what we get a picture of today. People being called back to gather around the king, to be ready for him. It's a wonderful promise. Let's line up with it as Christians. Let's let these promises act back on us in our prayers. And let's live reconciled lives with our King, our God, with one another, and with creation. Because Jesus' blood was shed, his precious blood was shed for this reconciliation to take place. Let's keep heading towards that mountain range when the whole earth will be filled with the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. I'm going to invite Babs and the band to come. We're going to sing a song now that is a kind of prayer. And maybe you'd like to join in and singing it. Maybe you would like to just use it as a prayer. Maybe there's a particular nation on your heart that you would long to see gathered in. The signal has gone up, the banner has been raised, and God is calling his people back around the King. Let's stand now and sing.